Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
A tremendous effort is ongoing worldwide, engineered at the very highest levels of reality, to raise the spiritual vibration of everybody on this planet. Fast. You and I are part of this process, and it's extraordinary, isn't it? It's thrilling. Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes. It seems that my particular part of this process is to help people to use the gospel teachings of Jesus as a way to raise their level of consciousness. And that works beautifully. But there are other methods that also can work, and methods, frankly, that might work better in your case. My guest today is T.J. Woodward. In his wonderful book, Conscious Being, he tells the tale of his 10-year spiritual journey, and he suggests how his path might become your path. Welcome, T.J. I'm so thrilled to have you here.
Thank you, Roberta. I am thrilled to be with you today and in conversation about how we do raise our vibration, and all of us are awakening right now. It's happening in such a beautiful and powerful way.
It certainly is, and it's happening fast. Now, I just want to start by reading something that people who are listening will understand could have come from liberating Jesus, but it doesn't. It comes from conscious being. Experiencing ourselves as love is the most natural thing in the world. The path to remembering ourselves as love is one of dismantling or unlearning everything we have been taught that contradicts this truth. Self-realization is nothing more than coming into alignment with what we already inherently are. That is beautiful. And that comes from a book in which nothing is really gospels related. This primarily, it's an Eastern tradition that you followed, right?
It is, Roberta. You know, early in my life, I actually grew up in the Episcopal Church, and I grew up loving the energy of a collective group of people coming together to celebrate spirit in some way. So I didn't grow up in a religion that had a whole lot of dogma. And then when I turned around 20, I met a remarkable woman that changed my life. Her name's Mary Helen Brownell, and she was a devotee of Sai Baba's in India. I was introduced to Buddhism and to Hinduism, and it really opened me up in a powerful way. It's what really resonated with my own being.
That's what's, I think, spectacular about this book, Conscious Being, which is just out, and which, frankly, I recommend that everyone who has just read Liberating Jesus, I recommend that you now turn to reading Conscious Being. It's the same teaching from a whole other part of the world, and it will reinforce for you that all of this is what is true. That's why I call our podcasts and our meetings together every week, Seek Reality. We should all be seeking reality. This is truth. And it's exciting that we get to talk about it and we begin to put it all together worldwide.
I love that title, Seeking Reality, because we often think of reality as something very different. And I love the part you read in my book, because that's the truth. The ultimate truth is all love. Yes.
Yes, that's right. In fact, also the other book that I have fresh out, as people who are listening will know, is Flying High in Spirit. That's what Mikey tells us. Mikey says love is really the only thing that exists. Just get everything else out of the way. He tells us that's what God is. That's what everything is. So from making it complex, which I think many people who from a Western tradition look at the East sort of think of that, oh, that's complex meditation and chanting and stuff. It turns out to be every bit as simple as the Gospels. It's all about learning how to love, and whatever resonates with you in that learning, that's what you should be doing. So tell us what you met this woman, but you came from a place of difficulty, right? Can you just briefly tell us what that was?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in a household. Here's what happened, Roberta. This is really all I know at this point about my experience. I came into this world extremely happy, extremely joyous. When I talk with my mother now, she said that I was the happiest baby and toddler that she had ever met.
Wow.
And at age 7, something happened to me and I closed off. There wasn't anything I can point to that says this is the exact moment or this is the exact event. event. But what happened is I closed off and shut down, and I made all these decisions that, quite frankly, are pretty shocking for a seven-year-old to make. The world isn't safe. Life isn't fair. I closed off and protected my heart, and I lived that way until I was 20, and that was a very painful way to live.
Oh, it was, especially for a child. How terrible that is. And so, but you then, you had some successes, right? And then you sort of hit rock bottom after that.
I did. You know what happened for me, Roberta, and this would be a kind of a long story. I'll give you the highlights. At age 20, I came into this spiritual path, and I did a lot of spiritual practice, a lot of expansion, a lot of opening, and a lot of inner work. And when I got into my 30s, I began to forget the importance of my spiritual path. And for whatever reason, I started believing that the way I was going to get happiness is from the outside in. So all from age 30 to 40 was all about external achieving. And what I recognize now is I felt broken in some way, and I believed that I needed to create my life outside to look a certain way in order to, quote, fix that part of me that felt broken.
Yeah, wow. Well, I think there are a lot of people, myself included, who can relate to having had a period in our lives when external success seemed to be necessary validation. And to grow beyond that, frankly, is to begin to grow spiritually. All right, here's another thing from your book, which I have never seen, and I think it is perfectly true. You give us the four levels of how we operate in the world. Level one is martyr, God as force or savior. That's frankly where 2,000 years ago Christianity began and where it remains. Level two, magical, God as law. Well, there's some of that too in Christianity. Level three, metaphysical, God as loving. Well, okay, we're getting better. And you point out that the New Age movement, which has been sort of prevalent for a number of decades, but it seems to be waning now, is at the metaphysical level. God is loving to us. God is not to be feared. But level four is the mystical. This is where we're all heading. God as love. And I would just add, we ourselves are part of God, so we are that same love. This is beautiful. I cannot begin to tell you how that resonates with me and likely resonates with listeners. We are progressing from, we know about evolution. Evolution starts where we're a little germ in the wide ocean, and we progress to be people, and we progress even further to be now spiritual people. And as spiritual people, we are progressing still more. We are learning in the end that the only thing that exists is love. We're learning to clear away everything that is not love. Just beautiful.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry to be doing all the talking, but I'm so excited about your book that I don't seem able to stop. But let's
thank you, Roberta.
Let's hear from you, though. You, as you began to do this research, you had the guidance of someone who was a mystical, who had a basis in the mystical Eastern traditions, right?
Yes. Mary Helen Brownell was my first teacher, and she wasn't, you know, a classic teacher, but she was a teacher in the way that she was living her own life. And it was such a powerful demonstration of someone that really was living from and as the mystical realm. And that part of my book that you read, I appreciate you read that. I devote a whole chapter to these four levels of conscious awareness. It's the best I could do in my mind to try to make sense of this awakening process that I have been on and that so many have been on. And, you know, recognizing that we create the idea of God based on our level of consciousness.
That's a very profound point. I want to say it again. We create our idea of God based on our own level of consciousness. And that's why our religions are so primitive, because when people 2,000 years ago or 1,500 years ago or whenever it was done, when people have an insight, but that insight is far beyond where they are spiritually, their impulse is to package it in in whatever is comfortable and familiar to them. That's why we have a first century religion, Christianity, that carries within it 22nd century or 23rd century teachings, which come from a universal teacher, Jesus. And to some extent, that's true of Eastern religions too, except there, more emphasis is placed upon the teachings of the original teacher. Isn't that right, or am I simplifying too much?
No, I love that, and I don't think we can ever simplify too much. And what I mean by that is, our minds want it to be so complicated, and it really is profoundly
right.
Simple. These great teachers came, you know, Buddha lived 2,500 years ago, Jesus 2,000 years ago, Lao Tzu. Those are just a few teachers that came that were living and teaching from the mystical realm. And that's really their message. And it's taken us, really a blink of an eye in some ways. It's taken us 2,500 years to recognize, oh, they were saying we're doing this, not they were the great teachers that were doing it. And even though they were using those words, we're finally getting it.
Yes. Yes. It's very exciting. So why are you not intimidated as I was? I majored in religion in college, and I found the Eastern traditions quite intimidating from my, little American girl perspective. Why did you not find it intimidating? Did your teacher break it down and make it simple, or did you find someone else who did?
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because she made it quite simple. And then I went to India.
Oh, dear.
I went to India in 1992, absolutely anticipating that I would fall in love with Hinduism and that I would totally understand it and have a profound spiritual experience. And when I got to India, to the ashram of Amichi, the spiritual energy was so intense, and I recognized it immediately that I was a product of the West, and I had no way that I was going to understand this complex series, because Hinduism is actually a lot of different religions that we in the West think are one, but it's actually quite complex.
Yes.
But what I did understand is the simplicity of the teaching that we are all absolutely one with source and one with power and one with love.
All right, I'm going to read something else, which I just cannot avoid reading. It's a little bit longer. I hope everyone will understand why this is so important for all of us to hear. TJ says, as our vision clears, it becomes obvious that any understanding other than knowing oneself to be love just does not make sense. Anything else is insane because it leads to insane behavior. It creates division and conflict and eventually leads to war, to all kinds of abuse of people, animals, the earth itself. It leads to untold suffering. This has reached such an extreme that our very survival is currently under threat. Is that not insanity? The only way to create a functional, harmonious, loving humanity and world is simply to remember ourselves to be love. It is our true nature, and we need to let our actions be in alignment with that knowing. However, as we move into the mystical level of consciousness and we fully know ourselves to be love, we recognize that there is actually no separate self to love. The very idea of loving oneself suggests duality, when in fact there is only oneness. Oh, this is so beautiful. Self-love implies that we are separate from the source of love rather than an expression of it. From the highest level of truth, the greatest act of self-love is to truly know who and what we are. Love is the truth of who we are. When we truly know this, everything changes. Then he says, can it be that simple? Well, I say yes. And here's another person who says, yes, dear, it is absolutely that simple. We make it complicated.
Yes, we do. And thank you for that. Thank you for the beautiful way you read that. You gave it such enthusiasm. And that really is the beginning part of that reading, is to simply recognize it's really speaking to what's happening and what has happened on this planet when we see ourselves as separate, when we believe the collection of stories that we've carried around about our own inherent separation from each other. It does lead to all of that. It does lead to war and conflict. So what's happening now is this what I call the great remembering that we are one with this source and with each other. From this place, when we know we are love, absolutely, there's nothing that needs to happen in the outer realm. When we all get there, peace is our natural way of being. We don't need to create peace. We need to be that peace.
We need to be peace. Right. Yes. The greatest teachers over and over say that we must become the change we want to see in the world. It's that simple. But this notion that self-love is a duality. Duality is what we're really fighting. The notion of another person as being other than us, the notion of God as being other than us, these are very primitive, childish views of reality. We are part of God. There is no separation between us and God, and there's no separation between us and anybody else in the world. I don't care who it is. I am coming reluctantly to believe that the greatest problem we now face is religions. And that's hard for me to say. I recently did a blog post in which I cite a study. They 1,000 Christian and Muslim and I guess agnostic children were tested on altruism. And it was found that the more religious the children were and the more religious their families were, it didn't matter which religion, the less altruistic they were, the more judgmental they were, the more punitive they were in their thinking.
Yeah, that's so powerful, Roberta. And it's because, you know, religions, I think you said it so beautifully at the beginning of the show, they're created from a consciousness of thousands of years ago, and it's so much of it is framed through the ego. If we are to go back and look at the fundamental and essential teachings of the great masters, the teachers themselves, we would find that what we call religion is actually not at all what they were teaching. No. So we could say that religion is the problem, and I think it is the way it's framed now, or we could say that religion itself is ready and needs a spiritual awakening.
Yes.
So that we can stop using religion to separate and judge.
The problem I see is that the very notion of a religion implies a belief system.
Yes.
And when we start a religion, we establish a belief system. It's really disgusting to watch how it was done with Christianity in the Council of Nicaea and some lesser known councils.
Exactly.
They voted. Let's see what's true. Let's vote. Let's not try to figure it out. We'll set this religion up and people will follow it. And they will follow it for thousands of years. How sad and how tragic that is, when what they had was the greatest set of teachings ever given us. I say greatest because they're simple.
Yes.
I've been practicing the following Jesus for only the past almost 5 years. Sad. I was in my 60s when I finally decided to give old Jesus a try. And I have to tell you, it has transformed my life in ways I cannot begin to describe. I'm going to try in a later podcast, but it's very hard. If you actually take Jesus as seriously as he always meant to be taken, it does transform your life. So looking at that and looking at the fact that religions are always time capsules. They're cultural traditions bound around the teachings of a powerful eternal being who's come to give us the truth. They're always like that. They're a fly in amber. I don't know of a religion that is not that way. Do you? I mean, you know more about this than I do.
No, I'll tell you, you know, I came into New Thought teaching in the late 80s through Unity, which I love.
I love Unity too. Yes,
yeah,
dear, I agree.
Taking these ancient teachings and bringing them into the 21st century. But here's the thing. Even those religions, Centers for Spiritual Living and Unity, were born in the late 1800s. And so what was New Thought is now 120, 140 years old. So there are people within those movements that want to, quote, stay true to the teachings.
That's right. Exactly right.
It's not with the people that started, just like those other great teachers. They would now be talking about the quantum field and what we're working with in this new consciousness. But something about the human mind and the human ego wants things to stay stagnant. And I love the way you frame that, you know, because religion is about belief, but spirituality is about an inner exploration. And those two are very different, although they can coexist.
Well, yes, but the danger has to be recognized. I love Unity too. I spent a lot of time in a Unity church that I came to very much love. I did my course in miracles studies there, and still I'm very fond of the church. I stopped going because I started to see that it was turning into a regular religion.
Exactly.
And others have said the same thing about unity at the highest level. They're more attached to the founders and the founders' beliefs than they are to the truth. So I guess our job, all of us, is to come up with a new paradigm which is going to suit that level 4 mystical understanding that God is love. God doesn't only love, God is love. We are love, and there is nothing else.
Exactly. And, you know, I started Awakened Living in San Francisco 3.5 years ago with a dedication to creating a mystical spiritual community where we would follow the teachings of our own hearts, our own beingness, and that we would create a community to reflect that back. And that's very different than belief. And I have to share with you, Roberta, people will come to me and say, I want you to print the beliefs of Awakened Living. And I say, well, that's not what we're doing. And sometimes people get a little frustrated with that. So it's exciting and it's unknown. And, you know, once we figure out how to frame this where people can really get it, I think we'll be onto something. That's my attempt in my book, Conscious Being. It can be said very simply. And that was my intention. And I think I'm committed to continuing to do it in that way.
How is your experiment working with are you finding that people are able to come together? What do you do, a worship service? How do you handle this?
Well, we do. Actually, we're moving into a new space where we're going to have about 4 or 5 events a week. The fundamental difference, Roberta, is we're talking about a new paradigm. And then the paradox is I stand up there and you know, kind of take the role of the teacher or the minister, but that's not what it's about, right?
Yes.
So I'm not up there sharing this is what you need to believe, but really opening us up to create a space where we go on the inner exploration. I say to my community, when I get up and talk, I'm the opening act. I'm the warm up. And then we have the real conversation, which is about us taking a topic or a principle and then really being in conversation about that, about our own journey, not about what we should be doing or what the teaching is saying, but how is this living within me?
I'm interested in coming and experiencing what you're doing, because I'm beginning to get questions as people read Liberating Jesus about what the new denomination is going to look like. And when I say to them, if there's a new denomination, we've all failed, they don't know where to go with that. And I frankly don't either. I think we are going to have to offer people a transition, which I had hoped would be unity, but I'm beginning to wonder about that. A transition to the new way of being in which we are God. We are living
Yes.
God in the world. When we do that, when enough of, in fact, it won't even take that many, apparently, of us to actually be living this truth, the whole world will change. It won't take all of us. It won't even take 10% of us.
Exactly.
But it will take each of us who's listening now to begin sincerely to make that effort.
Well, the fascinating piece is, what is the role of community in this? Because we still have this desire to connect.
Yes, so that's the thing. I agree with you. How do we establish a community which by its very definition is freedom of thought? Because if we don't have freedom of thought and freedom of exploration, we aren't going to, each of us individually, find our own path. As I've said to you, your book is Liberating Jesus from a whole different perspective, but it gets to the same place. I would like each person who reads my book to then read yours and come to understand the universality of this truth. So how we put it together is something you and I are going to put our heads together about. But I think you understand the need more than most people do. And you also understand the danger. And it's the danger which I'm focused on. So if you can help me to focus more on the need, then I will be grateful.
Well, I think, Roberta, for me, it's a commitment to speaking to it as many times as possible. There's something about the mind that we need to hear things repeatedly. So it's important for me to always say, I'm not the teacher, I'm the student. We're all students of this, and the teacher is living within us.
Yes.
Right? Actually, that's not right, because it's not living within us. It's
yes.
the ultimate truth of who we are.
Yes.
The community then becomes about coming together to unlearn. Now, that's a really fascinating proposition.
That's so true. I love that. We are love. We are perfect. We've got to unlearn the untruths that make us think otherwise.
Yes, and I
Absolutely.
Had someone come to Awakened Living and say, well, it kind of feels like therapy. Yes, because we're exploring what needs to be released, not exploring what we need to learn. And it's a completely different paradigm.
Time for another quotation, and then I'm going to go to a break. Suffering is always rooted in our attachment to have things be a certain way. We believe that if we had total control over our circumstances, we would possess the key to our happiness. But the truth is, happiness is always available to us in every moment, no matter how our circumstances look. We can always find a purpose for whatever life presents us. In reality, there is nothing to be sought or found. Nobody needs to be saved. All that we seek is absolutely available to us in this moment. When we turn within and remember our oneness with Source, we know we are complete. This is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and Flying High in Spirit. You can learn more about all my books and find my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest today is T.J. Woodward. T.J.'s earnest spiritual seeking led him over a decade to achieve a really dramatic spiritual transformation. T.J., there are very, very few people now that I think of as teaching me, but you're one of my teachers, and I'm very grateful to have met you.
Oh, thank you, Roberta.
So let's talk about the fact, and I think this is something important to stress, that as you begin to get this, the fruits are immediate. I mean, there are people listening perhaps who are thinking, well, I'm willing to do it to save the world, but I hate to give my life to that. I want to say, having lived 60-odd years of a very successful life, an attorney, married 43 years, I've got 3 children, 5 grandchildren, by every measure, I was living the dream. Only when I started to take the teachings of Jesus as seriously as he means them to be taken, did I begin actually to be happy. It doesn't take long. This process is a happiness process right from the start. So if you think you're seeking happiness, this is the way to do it. Liberating Jesus, conscious being, these are the ways to begin to learn to really be happy to your soul. And then, frankly, you don't need anything. I no longer care about anything except those I love and God. That's all I care about now. Who needs money? You don't need it. We think we need it because we think that then it'll buy us enough stuff that we'll be happy. But the truth is, as someone said, you spend the first half of your life accumulating stuff and the second half getting rid of it. But the truth is, there's no amount, no billionaire, no trillionaire is as happy as I am now. And I say that truthfully. As you begin to know who you really are, the joy that comes from that is beyond anybody's ability to express it. So, TJ, it's time for you to talk for a minute, and then I want to read another quotations.
Okay, well, that was beautifully said, and that's exactly my experience. You know, we in America in particular are, I would say, actually obsessed or addicted to creating our lives from the outside in, you know,
yes.
And there's something that's happening in consciousness in our country where there's a sense of yearning and happiness comes into play. We have a new obsession of being what we consider to be happy, but we're really framing happiness in a very different way. What I hear you talking about is absolute knowing that you are love, you are peace, you are presence, and from that place, nothing in the external realm needs to happen. Maybe that's just a new definition of happiness. Maybe we need to unlearn everything we've thought these words mean.
Because the happiness of the world is a seeking. And to be always only seeking more money, more this, more that, a higher status in the country club, whatever you're seeking, even if it's learning, things that sound good, whatever you're seeking, you are not getting anywhere unless you first are allowing yourself to become completely who you really are.
Yes.
The hunger we feel is inside, and that hunger is only fed when we clean out all the garbage that our cultures have put into us over our lifetimes. Clean it out, open the windows, let the air in. The air is sweet.
Yeah, in my book, Roberta, I think I say, stop seeking happiness. Seeking itself is the antithesis of happiness. So we're on this treadmill trying to achieve something that we already are. It's just the most amazing thing when we wake up to that and say, oh my gosh. And then there's forgiveness and compassion. I forgive myself for being such a seeker for the first 40 some years of my life.
Try 60 some.
Thank you for the perspective. Yes.
Oh, yes. I think forgiveness, the ability to forgive comes naturally. I'm going to be talking more about that next week because it's an important holiday. We'll be celebrating Christmas. And I think it's the best gift that I can give to the Lord is to help people better understand how to forgive. But I have to tell you that I think forgiveness comes naturally when you begin to be enlightened this way.
There's no doubt. Yes.
You no longer blame other people. A Course in Miracles says all the stuff that you blame other people for is a projection of your own blaming of yourself. And I think that's right. Based on what I've learned now, I think they're right.
Absolutely. I think there's no doubt about that. Once we are absolutely in this process of awakening, because it seems like a process in our mind. So when we're in that process and wake up to the truth of who we are, forgiveness of others actually doesn't even, I think I say in conscious being, at the mystical level, there's nothing to forgive ever.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Once we are that.
That's exactly right. And discovering all of that is as I say, it's a happiness beyond my ability to express it. You're happy and you don't need anything to make you, nothing could make you happier.
Yes.
The fact that only a few of us really getting to this place will transform the world is another thing you mentioned. And I want to, this is the last quote. I have other quotes, but I'm going to resist it. I want to say this one more little passage though. Many people believe that when a critical mass of human beings has shifted into the new consciousness, the whole human race will automatically shift. Before a tipping point is reached, the new consciousness remains the assets of the individuals who have shifted. However, when that critical mass is reached, the new consciousness will spread throughout humanity, becoming the shared property of us all. That is true and that is profound. The personal transformational work that each individual does for him or herself is therefore the most important contribution that we can make to the whole of humanity.
Wow.
That's true. Well, you said it, dear, but I have to tell you, that's absolutely right. That's right. That's where all of us are going. That's why you're listening now. That's why I do these podcasts and bring you people who can help you with your own awakening. Because once enough of us have made enough progress toward our ultimate spiritual awakening, everything else that we want to change, whether it's wars or you know, cruelty to children or harming the planet, whatever you feel is more important is not more important, because this is going to solve it all.
Yes. And, you know, Lao Tzu told us that thousands of years ago, saying that the greatest gift we can offer the world is that of our own transformation. So, you know, it's taken us a little while to really embody.
When did he say those words?
I think 2,500 years ago,
yes.
Right? He lived even before Buddha, I believe. So, you know, it's fascinating because we're getting it in a really profound way that this is what we're here to do. And as we shift from an external focused reality to an internal focused reality, and when we wake up to this, which so many of us are, and therefore the collective consciousness is also changing, we're not going to have to worry about hunger or war or separation, because
yes,
that's going to be a natural outpicturing. And I just want to say one thing that I think is really powerful. The difference right now is we're not understanding these principles and these teachings. We're now embodying them. And that's the difference. We're embodying,
that's
it's knowing.
The difference. That's right. People have been reading the teachings of the great masters for thousands of years. Certainly, every Bible ever printed has contained Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John in various translations. And it's all been ignored because we never fully understood that this was not about ritual. It was not about fear. It was not about the fact that God created us, or that none of the things that our religions have taught us really are real. Those are old teachings. We are God. Our minds are part of God in the most intimate way possible. And my teacher, Thomas, he was Thomas Jefferson, now he's my primary guide. My teacher says that when enough people are following the teachings of Jesus, one of these paths, we will bring the kingdom of God on earth. And he says it won't take long. He predicts 200 years. I trust the guy. He's pretty smart. So that's what I'm aiming for. I'm aiming for the top, bringing the kingdom of God on earth. And if you choose to do it with Eastern teachings, you're going to be doing exactly the same thing. Because each of these masters, there's one truth. And I think one of the great things about reading your book confirms for me, there's only one truth that all leads to the same place.
Absolutely.
And that place is, in fact, a paradise on earth for every human being. So whatever you want to fix, this is the way to fix it.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I have a chapter in my book titled Heaven on Earth, and I recently had someone, he actually is a minister, and he said, I think we need to not teach people that because we're telling people that they should always be happy and always be in bliss. And I said, yes, we are teaching that. But that's not, it doesn't mean we're not going to have pain. You know, I wanted to speak for a moment to the difference between pain and suffering. You know, sometimes there is a teaching, or I came into a teaching where I thought I was only supposed to look at the love and light and not recognize that part of our existence does seem to have pain, but how we relate to the pain is yes. What creates suffering or not. So the way I say it, and I'm not original on this, is pain is in the body, suffering is in the mind. We have painful experiences, but how I relate to those is what actually can create heaven. When I welcome all life's experience and call it fertilizer, it can be used
yes.
for my growth.
Yes. This is one of the things I love about your book, because we talk about the same things, but in different ways. You see it as fertilizer. I see the negative things that seem negative that happen to us when we're here as just the machines in the gym, which are helping us to learn spiritually.
Oh,
this
perfect.
Is just a lousy afternoon in the gym, and we come here to strengthen our spiritual muscles. But that's all it is. Our eternity is lived in God, in perfect love, joy, and bliss. That's yes. our natural being. Yes. So if you got to have some fertilizer in your life, if you have to go to the gym, that's only toward an ever more perfect union with God. So how could that be bad?
Exactly. And recognizing that it's heaven on earth doesn't mean that it's about the external. And that's where we get caught up.
Yes.
When we hear
yes.
that through the lens of the ego, we think everything needs to look a certain way in order for there to be heaven on earth. But really, when we recognize and embody the truth that we are love, we are bliss, we are joy, when we know that, we witness. So we witness going to the gym. We don't even have to do the lifting, right? We just see it happening because the truth of who we are gets to witness that. And that's the exciting part. Then whatever happens, as you so beautifully said, it doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter what's in my bank account. It doesn't matter. So it's just, I'm just so excited to make the connection with you for someone who's speaking this truth in such a beautiful way as well.
Yes. Anyone listening? Yes, this is a love fest. We are. when I first read his book, I have to say, TJ, I was so excited and immediately recommended it to my own publisher. And my hope is that more and more people are going to discover and read this book and make it, internalize it. Because unlike some books that you might read, which embody Eastern teachings, this is easy, it's well written, it's intuitive, and it's very powerful. You write very, very well.
Thank you, Roberta.
So we're not coming to the end of our time, but we're coming to a point where I want to make sure that you have had your chance to talk, since I've sort of talked a record amount during this interview. Tell us from your perspective, you know, how did you come to write this book, and what do you hope to have come from it?
Well, thank you. The continuation of my personal journey is, as I said, I was all about achieving in my 30s, and I started a business, and I lost sight of the truth. somehow I lost sight of the essential knowing that I am love, and I began to seek outward again. I was living such an egoic experience, and yes. then I came into a spiritual teaching that was all about manifesting. So I was learning how to control my thoughts and then create more on the external realm. I was feeling more and more and more empty, and through that feeling of emptiness, I started doing all kinds of harm to myself and others. You know, my business collapsed. Once I made the commitment, though, because what happened for me, Roberta, is there was an inner knowing, an inner yes to becoming, embodying these teachings, and in some way being a teacher, a minister, a coach, whatever word we use.
Yes.
Once I said yes to that, the external realm fell apart and everything collapsed. I went into a period of great darkness and depression, and then I had this great spiritual experience that happened in India, which I'd love to say more about.
Talk about that, because many people, mine happened when I was 8, but many people at an older age will have a mystical experience that will help them along this route.
Yeah, I think, you know, people will often ask me what starts people on a spiritual path. And it seems like two things, although not necessary. I think sometimes the loss of something can be a great, it's a doorway. It doesn't mean that it creates the awakening, but it gives us an opportunity to awaken. So I had that experience in 2005. And then I went into this period of darkness and depression, really. I was immobilized and in my bed depressed for time. And then in 2006, I went to India, and I had this experience in Varanasi where my ego was stripped away, and it lasted that way for a day or two. And I absolutely knew that we are love, that we are source. There was no separation from me and God. Now, my ego came back in after that, but it came back in a very different way.
I went through this with A Course in Miracles, which I recommend to everyone who sincerely wants to undergo this. I mean, we think we've conquered our ego, and the ego is not you. The ego is an artifact of what you've been taught, but it's an aspect of you, I guess. What do you think the ego is before I say what happened to me?
Thank you. Yeah. So I, again, early in my teachings, now I don't know if they were saying this, but throughout my 20s, I thought the goal was to be rid of the ego. Yeah. And I was at Agape International Spiritual Center about a year ago, and Dr. Sue Mortar said only ego would want ego to die. And I just love that. So ego to me is really,
that is cute.
Isn't that wonderful? Because
yes.
That's what I had hoped for. And what happened for me, Roberta, after this intense mystical experience in India, what happened is my ego came back, but I recognized it wasn't who I was. And that was really it. And that's how I shifted. I now recognize that the truth of who I am is love or source or joy. And that ego is something that I have, and that it actually can be quite useful in the world. But the negative, if you will, aspect of ego is a collection of beliefs or stories or ideas, opinions. Again, just like you said about religion, it's belief lives there. And that keeps me stuck in a particular way of being that is always limited by my own perception. So a spiritual awakening is to recognize that the truth of who I am is not that, and then that can be used as an instrument to deliver spirit.
I think that's beautifully said. You don't get rid of your ego. What you do is transform it. And
yes.
That's what A Course in Miracles helps you do. My experience with it was that your ego fights being transformed because it's very comfortable as it is. And I developed a tremendous fear of rejoining God, as if I ever left, because that would mean some people call it the second death. When you rejoin God, your awareness is extinguished. And that was very fearful for me. And this was probably 10 years ago. I was so fearful I couldn't sleep. And one morning I woke up, and in my mind was, you will never lose awareness. What you will have is God's awareness. And I thought, oh, okay, that I can live with. And my ego has not bothered me again. It's never made me fear. I fear nothing. If you're fearful, your ego is still in control. That's my belief. But
absolutely.
But we'll see. Once you lose all fear, you understand that you have put the ego into its proper place. Still, as you say, TJ, useful, but it can't be running your life, because if it does, it's going to make you fearful, grasping, and frankly, unpleasant even to yourself.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's really the big shift that happens. I love the way you said it. We see the world as God sees it. In other words, we see the world through reality.
Yes.
Because what we've called reality is that ego-based reality actually is the illusion. It's the lie. It's the story that we've believed. Fear lives there, separation, war. And so when we wake up to recognizing this ultimate truth of who we are, then we get to look at it. And you know what occurs to me, Roberta, at this moment is then it's laughter. Naturally emerges, because it's quite funny on some level that we've been, running around believing we are our egos. And when we wake up from that, it's like, oh my gosh, this whole time, you mean I didn't have to struggle?
Yes.
I didn't have to live in fear?
Yeah, it is
it's
funny.
Joy.
That's right. It's funny, except all I keep thinking is that if Christianity only practiced what Jesus taught us, I would have learned as a child the things I had to learn when I
yes.
was old.
Yes.
If we do nothing else, we have to begin this moment to start to teach truth to the children. That's the most important thing we can do, whether that truth is Eastern traditions or whether it's the teachings of Jesus, wherever it comes from, the simple truth of who we are and what is true is something that children should be imbibing with their formula, with their breast milk. They should learn it from, this is their birthright. We have stolen it from them. We didn't mean to. I mean, we were trying to do our best. But our cultures have not been conducive to the development of truly spiritual beings. And we are spiritual beings by our very nature. That's what we are. So I'm hoping, if nothing else, that we can come up with ways to help children from the beginning not develop things they're going to later have to unlearn.
Well, see, and you're onto something that's so huge. Of course, I know you know that, but what's so huge is the children already know it.
That's right.
We just need to not teach them the other stuff.
That's
but that,
right.
What that requires is that we do our own inner clearing, our own inner work. If I can't do my own unlearning, I'm going to keep consciously or unconsciously teaching that to any children in my life.
Yes.
So that's where this is so exciting. We simply embody this. Children already come in with that. Like, we can learn from them what presence, what awe, what wonder, what connection is, what oneness is. But what we're doing is we're saying, that's not true. Let me teach you what's true.
Yes.
And then we're teaching them the quote, the ways of the world. And I know that that's the exciting part right now, is that we know that the children are coming in with this higher level of conscious awareness. If we can just stop teaching them these false learnings, then that's what creates this
yes.
bliss on earth.
That's right. No, this is a very exciting time to be alive. This is the first generation. People who are living now are the first people in all of human history who really have had the opportunity to transform the world by transforming themselves back into what they actually never stopped being.
Yes.
That's thrilling. And but it carries with it a responsibility. It's as if we're being offered the most wonderful possible gift. We can still refuse it, but to refuse it hurts not only yourself, it hurts the world. It delays yes. the inevitable awakening of the entire human race to what is true, to our glorious, eternal nature, which is infinite love and nothing else.
Absolutely. That's it. That's what's happening right now. And each of us are called to do it and to be it, really. But this is what is so exciting, because people will often say, and I've had some people say to me, isn't that navel gazing when you're only looking at your own process? But this is the greatest thing. The action that's required is an inner action right now. Each
that's
of
right.
us are here to unlearn all of those stories that prevent us, or we think prevent us, from knowing our essential nature. When we all get that, and I'm going to say it this way, because we're all getting that now, and more of us are embodying that, that's the shift that's happening. That's
yes.
the action we're taking.
I should add that the shift is happening quickly.
Yes.
When The Fun of Dying came out in 2010, I did a lot of speaking before large and small audiences, and many of them spiritual audiences, a lot of Unity churches. Mm-hmm. And I would be talking about these things, and because we learn. Frankly, another place we learn all of this is the dead tell us all of this stuff as well. because they know they are where they already know what's going on for the most part. But I would be looking out at them and there would be blank faces and confusion and questions that were amazingly unenlightened. And that's where it started for me 5 years ago. And now, and even actually, I dated to 2012, not being suspicious to superstitious about this, but something happened late in 2012 to the audiences I was talking to, and I began to see nods, smiles, and great questions, which in some cases were more about things I'd never thought about, but were important questions to ask. I started to love talking about these books.
Yeah, that's the importance of spiritual community, right? That we can be in this conversation and share our experience of our own awakening. You know, it's interesting. We started Awakened Living in San Francisco in April of 2012 with the intention of knowing that was a year of great transformation. We were very conscious about that. I knew I had an intuition and a knowing that 2012 was the year to start this community. I had that very clearly. So all I had to do was say yes and step into it, which of course involved me stepping away in some ways from unity, and then in another way, not stepping away at all, because I know that it's all just an extension of our journey.
It is. And has anyone in any other city started a similar community, or are you in touch with anyone who is thinking about it?
Well, my knowing is that there are lots of communities like this sprouting up, if you will, throughout the world. I haven't made a whole lot of connection with them. And maybe that's what we're here to do today, Roberta, is to put this out there so that we can know other people that are creating communities like this so that we can all connect.
That's an excellent point. If there is someone who's thinking about doing that or who is just part of a small study group or something, or a meetup that is looking to grow spiritually in the ways that we're talking about, send me an email, rgrimes@robertagrimes.com. I can put you in touch with TJ and who knows? It's not going to take many people to begin this. As someone said, there's nothing so powerful as an idea whose time has come. And we know that the idea, that the time for this idea has certainly come. My book is being bought, I should just say, by countries all over the world, big distributors in places like China and United Arab Emirates, and places where you would not think there was a spiritual hunger. There is, in fact, and a worldwide spiritual hunger, and it will be fed. And we who are talking now, you who are listening, and TJ and I are all part of trying to begin to meet that need. And it's a glorious place to be for all of us.
Yes, it is. And it is happening everywhere. So this is really, it's exciting that we get to, you know, this is a great example. You could say that like technology might be born from ego, but it is such a great vehicle for delivering spirit. We're now connecting with people all over the world, and this is resonating. You know, we have that inner knowing. Yes. When we hear this language, like Roberta, when I hear you talk, I just have an immediate sense of oneness with you and this teaching, if you will. And that's what's happening. And that's why it's such an exciting time to be alive right now.
Very exciting. And I'm so sorry we're coming to the end of our time. Tell people how they can get in touch with you directly.
Thank you, Roberta.
And what's your website?
TJWoodward.com is the best place to find everything that I'm doing. The book is there, our community in San Francisco. I meet with clients one-on-one in San Francisco and also worldwide on Skype and FaceTime. And who I work with are really people that have either gone through a loss, that are wanting to use that loss as a doorway into their awakening, or maybe they've had that experience, like you said, Roberta, you know, they've created their life beautifully. They have the great career, they have the great partnership, and they have that "is this all there is" moment. I love that question. When someone asks the question, "is this all there is?" those are the people I love working with, because this, we can awaken. We can find these mechanisms and these methods to help us accelerate our awakening.
Thank you. That was beautifully said. I can't begin to express how glad I am to have met you, and I know this is the beginning of a lovely friendship. Yeah. And I'm so sorry that we're going to need to stop for now, but I'm sure we'll be talking again and do another podcast with TJ before long. But meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began. You never will end. And when you really understand what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our one reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available for free both on this website, webtalkradio.net, and older ones are available on iTunes. Just search there for Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My nonfiction books are Liberating Jesus, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, and Flying High in Spirit. And you'll find the details about my books and also my blog at robertagrimes.com. Our guest next week is going to be your host. I don't know about you, but 2015 has been the most extraordinary year of my life. That I was chosen to write Liberating Jesus is the greatest gift I can imagine. I can't top it. But next week, I'm going to give Master Jesus the best birthday gift that I can manage. Please join me. This week, we've been talking with a truly remarkable spiritual seeker and finder, T.J. Woodward. He's the author of Conscious Being, Awakening to Your True Nature. Like J.D. Messenger with his 11 Days in May, who was our recent guest, T.J. has gone through what is a natural human process of raising his awareness, remembering who he really is, and therefore raising his spiritual vibration. This is exactly the same process Jesus takes us through in his gospel teachings. In those very teachings that we Christians have been ignoring for 2,000 years. Learning who we are more perfectly and raising our spiritual vibration is the reason why we live on earth at all. Dear friends, every one of us is being called now to raise our own spiritual vibration. The whole of humankind is being called to awaken. As we make progress spiritually, we're going to begin to find deeper and more complete personal happiness, and we are going to transform the world. So do you want to begin an age of universal peace and love? The only way for us to achieve any of this is first to find it in ourselves. As Jesus says, the kingdom of God is within you. However you do it, never forget that the purpose of your life is spiritual growth. We're going to be doing this together, dear friends, and it is going to be glorious. But for now, please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.